Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, got a full house today.
We most certainly do. This is going to be a fantastic show this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to hear from Nick with Instacart. Is his last name Friedrich?
Friedrich, correct. Yeah,
there you go. Well, that was a good guess, right?
It's 50-50.
And we're going to talk to speaker, author, consultant David Knorr. But first up on the Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast general manager for Atlanta with a little company called Maven from General Motors, Mr. Adam Rabinowitz. How are you, man?
Doing well. How are you?
I am doing well. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Adam, can you share a little bit about Maven? What are you guys up to?
Sure. So you mentioned that we're part of General Motors. So Maven is the personal mobility brand from General Motors. What really happened was General Motors learned that millennials living in cities, they're buying cars at a lower and lower rate.
Right.
So how do we make sure that millennials, when they're in a car, that they're in a General Motors car?
Right. Because they're still using cars.
Exactly. They're getting from point A to point B right. Somehow.
So now, how did this come about? Was this like the brainchild of somebody at General Motors said, let's do this? Or was this Maven, its own separate company, the General
Motors? It was Adam's idea. Right?
You woke up.
Give me all the credit. No, yeah, it was completely internally imagined. I think the numbers spoke for themselves, and they're like, we have to get out in front of this. You know, for a company like General Motors that's been designing, building, and selling for, centuries,
right?
This was a huge shift for them, but really they wanted to make sure they got out in front of it before, they were a laggard.
That's right. So how did it come about? Like, how did you test it? How did you come up with the name? How did you build it?
Yeah, I think, with a company of General Motors' size and stature, that the name Maven was something that was tested around the world, not just around America.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that's ambiguous enough where it can evolve into a whole lot of different things. As people know, the industry is shifting and changing more now than ever. I think our CEO, Mary Barra, her line is, the automotive industry is going to change more in the next 5 years than it has in the last 50. And I think Maven is going to be that brand that is first in mind when we make that shift from, the traditional models to the mobility services.
Now, you mentioned that this is kind of a worldwide endeavor, but Atlanta is one of the places where you're beginning the journey?
Yeah, I'd say that we're trying to nail it in America first. There's a couple of things going on around the world, but if we can nail it in America, I think
feel pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's happening here in Atlanta?
Yeah, so we have two operations. The one that probably going to talk more about today is the car sharing operation. So we place our vehicles around the city in highly walkable, densely populated areas where we think millennials are more likely to live, work, and play. What we're really trying to do here, as opposed to maybe other cities where car ownership is less tied to the city itself, we want to encourage people to live car light, and if even car light, car free. But car light is, I think, more realistic in a city like Atlanta in the immediate. We want to empower people to make that decision. Maybe there's a couple that lives together in Midtown in a high rise, and they both have a car, and they realize like this, one of them walks to work every day. Maybe they realize that, we don't both need a car. Maybe that empowers us because there's a Maven car parked around the corner. Well, if one of you has a car and the other one needs a car, you can go grab it when you're there,
right.
Rent it by the hour. $8 an hour is where they start, and that includes fuel and insurance. So pretty easy. Injury.
So now, let's walk through how this works. So I'm a person, I've become familiar, I'm aware now Maven exists. Is there an app? Like,
yep.
How do I kind of interact with it?
Yeah, everything takes place in the app. And that's one of the really cool things about our service. You search for the car, you reserve the car, and you actually unlock the car and start the car all via your smartphone. There are no keys, nothing other than your phone to get that car started. So you unlock it with a button, you press the push button start, and you're off you go.
And then, so now I got the car, I can do, is it a mile limit or it's?
180 miles a day. So, you can take that
pretty far. Pretty far in the metro area. And then how do you foresee people are going to be using this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different use cases. We also rent them by the hour, but we rent by the hour and by the day. So for example, if you wanted to rent an SUV for the weekend to take a group of friends on a camping trip, that's totally cool.
Okay.
Yep. So, we have lots of people who rent them for the weekends. Weekends are our busiest times, as you can imagine. But also there's people who use them for just running errands. Maybe you only have a sedan and you're going to Home Depot or to IKEA to buy a sofa.
Like a truck or something.
Right. So we've got access to the whole GM fleet of vehicles. So we have Tahoes, Escalades, you know, really anything across the gamut that you could need.
Now, you mentioned like going, you know, to the mountains or hiking or something like that. What if I get it like messy and dirty? Is that my responsibility to clean it?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be reasonable with you if it's lightly used, but if you bring it back completely messy, we want to make sure it's ready to go for the next person. Exactly.
So that's kind of the intent, is I have to have it ready for the next person.
Ideally, yeah. But at the same time, we understand that light wear and tear, you know, that's going to happen. Right. So we have a fleet of associates who go around cleaning these cars.
Check it out periodically.
Exactly.
Now, we did a pre-call interview on this, and a part that I thought was fascinating was the... because it's GM, I got access to your the thing over the... I press the button in the car.
OnStar, yeah.
Right?
Which is an incredible differentiator from the competition. We really want to be a more seamless, integrated approach. We want it to feel technology friendly and technology forward. So anything you need while you're on the road, press that button. They're there for you. So that's if you want directions, they'll send them to the car. If you want a place, where can I go eat for dinner? They'll help you out there. You name it.
Now, is that an automated thing, or is OnStar a human being?
It's a human being.
So I'm actually going to have a conversation with somebody.
Absolutely.
So that's a huge point of differentiation.
That's one of them. Another one is there's no membership fee and there's no sign-up fee. So with a lot of the competition, they're charging you to sign up. They're charging you for an annual membership fee. With Maven, it's $0. So there's really much more incentive to try it out, much less barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. We want you to get in those cars, and we want you to experience it.
Now, is it something where I have to have the app to see where the cars are, or can I go online and get a feel for where the vehicles are?
Yeah, you can go online, but I'd say the app is definitely the most clear. I think because it uses where you are located, so it'll show you these are the ones that are closest to you where you are currently, and you can search based on a number of different factors.
Now, for you personally, how has it been kind of working for this big mega company, GM, and then kind of this startup-y Maven?
Yeah, I think I get the best of both worlds. I come from a startup background. I worked for Instacart, the online grocery delivery service that you'll hear more about later. And what I think I get what I loved about Instacart, because Maven essentially functions as a startup, just wholly owned by General Motors. So we have the rich parents that can really help us out and make sure we have the room to grow and also the room to fail. But if we do fail fast, because we always want to be learning and growing.
Right.
But at the same time, the access to all of those resources that General Motors can provide really gives us the confidence that this is not just an experiment. This is an effort, and this is a real thing that's happening.
They're not looking for a reason to say no. They're trying to make this a go.
Right. And that was the thing I pushed on most when I was deciding whether to join. I was asking those hard questions. I was like, is this just an experiment? Are you guys just trying this out? Is this just for PR? These are things that I ran through my head before I learned exactly how serious this effort was and how international it was in its reach.
Being the GM here in Atlanta, what is your kind of mission? What are you going to be doing where they're going to be high-fiving you at the end of the quarter?
We want to add as many members as possible. And I think, in a city like Atlanta, we're a little, the expectations are a little different than they would be in a city like Boston or Washington, D.C. or New York or L.A. or San Francisco. But I think if we grow our member base, we've found that the members we do have love our service and they continue to use it. So the more members we add, the more reservations and usage we expect.
So you're calling a user a member, even though you don't have to join necessarily.
Well, you have to join, but it's free to join.
So it's free to join, but you're still a member.
Right.
And then the advantage of membership is that you have access to this on demand.
Right. So, our vehicles, they run the gamut from a Chevy Cruze, which starts at $8 an hour, all the way up to a Cadillac Escalade, which is only $18 an hour. And that includes gas and includes insurance. So to drive around an Escalade, we have lots of people who, you can imagine our busiest nights for the Escalades are Fridays and Saturday nights. People want to be seen in an Escalade. So you can kind of be the man for just a few
hours.
Bucks, right?
And so now the way that, who is your target? Is it the college person? Is it the person that has a job and already has a career? Is it the traveler?
People living and working and playing in cities. We found that millennials are the target audience when it comes to that, just by percentages. Like around 70% of our members are millennials. But I think this is really a convenience for anybody who lives or works or plays in an urban setting.
Mm-hmm. And then like right now, if they're in an urban setting, they have some sort of vehicle usually, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your assumption, is that they have some vehicle or they're vehicle-less?
In Atlanta, probably they do.
Right.
But we want to make sure we're there for people who don't. And also we want to be there as a reason and kind of that last excuse to like, all right, I'm shedding my car. I think now, especially living in cities and millennials, it's like a point of pride if you don't own a car. If you can work near where you live And if you can...
And I got rid of my car. That's like a status symbol now. Get rid of your car.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
You got rid of your phone. You got rid of your landline. So now get rid of your
car. Yeah, exactly. You're progressive, I guess.
So now, how do you get the person to try it? Because if they have a car already, like what's the kind of the incentive to experiment and just give this a go?
Yeah, I think we want to be more complimentary to their car ownership. So depending on what kind of car they own, you know, if they own, like I mentioned before, if they own a smaller sedan and they need an SUV for whatever reason, the fact that there's no membership fee and no sign-up fee, it really makes more sense than taking an Uber or a Lyft if you're going to be going and running errands, because it's about the same price, if
because
not less.
Now, because you have that wide variety of vehicles to choose from, you have every occasion covered.
Exactly.
Whether it's like a super nice date night, or if it's, you know, I got the couch, I got to get moved, or I want to go to the mountains.
Right. And, you know, or think about when you're getting your car serviced and do I want, or maybe, you know, it's going to be a long-term fix. Am I going to rent a car? Is it going to be worth it? You don't really have to ask if it's going to be worth it, because you only have to pay for exactly what you use.
Right.
I think people are so accustomed to doing this like calculus in their head whenever they sign up for a subscription to anything. Am I going to use it enough to make the subscription worthwhile?
Right.
And I think we really have that benefit of not having the membership fee or sign-up fee, where you don't have to do that math. It's just like, okay, I'm just going to pay for what I use. And if, you know, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So now, have you gotten feedback from the users?
Oh yeah. They love the cars. I think that's one of our big differentiators, that they get in this car and they're blown away. Maybe they've used the competition before. Our cars are brand new. They're loaded with all the latest technology. They've got leather seats. There's 4G LTE Wi-Fi in every car. There's Sirius XM radio. We mentioned the OnStar. It's Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. It means when you plug your phone into these cars, it looks like your phone is on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just next level. And I think people may not expect that when they hear General Motors, but when they get in these cars, they're blown away. And I think, you know, from an overall General Motors perspective, think about that. You have the millennials living in the cities who may not own a car, but eventually they might leave the city and move to the suburbs and need to own a car. We have an idea that maybe we'll be top of mind when they look for that next purchase.
And just having the presence of having all these GM cars rolling down downtown and midtown all day long, that's not hurting anything, right?
Not at all. And the other side of our business, actually, we rent our cars to Lyft and Uber drivers. So they're lightly used. Lyft and Uber drivers rent them. They pay a weekly fee for that. And then Lyft and Uber will subsidize the fee depending on how many rides these Lyft and Uber drivers are doing. So we've got hundreds of cars driving around the city. If you're with Lyft, if you're a customer with Lyft, you call a Lyft. You may not know it, but you're in a General Motors Maven vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That way,
Lyft and Uber's happy because they know it's a good quality vehicle.
Yep.
And then the driver's happy because they don't have to have any expense whatsoever with a vehicle.
Right. We take care of the maintenance and all that.
Now, you mentioned Instacart. How did that relationship, was it because you guys worked together? Like, how'd that bubble up? The Maven Instacart?
Oh, no, that was just my job before. And, you know, I had the opportunity was presented to me with Maven. And I thought, you know, one of my favorite parts about Instacart was I was here at the beginning, I guess, to launch and grow and scale this Instacart business and help it become what it's become today. And that was a big point of pride, but it was also the most fun time for me, because I really felt like the success or the failure of the business was on my shoulders.
Right.
And that's really what I, you know, I thrive on. So when I got the opportunity to bring another service like this to Atlanta, I'm a native, I take a lot of pride in this city, and to bring a service like this to my city, it was almost like too good to be true, another opportunity to do what I loved most at Instacart for Maven.
But it seems like an interesting strategy. Not only are you going after the end user, you're going after these partnerships with these kind of delivery services like Uber, Lyft, and Instacart.
Yeah, I mean, and that stuff is happening, you know, a little higher level. It's more of the national partnerships, but to be able to execute on those and operationally on the ground has been a really cool experience.
And then, so what's next for you?
What's just, next?
Like, you're just getting the word out to get more users?
Yeah, that's the goal. We want to make sure, you know, if we're going to find the best spots in the city. Mm-hmm. So we take, you know, feedback very, very well when it comes to people asking for our Mavens in their, maybe it's in their apartment building or their condos. But yeah, growing our membership base, getting the word out, you'll see us around town more and more. We want to focus on that urban core, you know, the area around our vehicles. So the midtown, the downtown, Virginia Highland, Old Fourth Ward, East Atlanta Village, kind of the neighborhoods within the in-town area. We're trying to really.
And you want
to
have conversations with the people who are running like the apartment complex or condo buildings.
Absolutely.
Because those might be good locations to keep them, right?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great way to partner. You know, we'll provide you the vehicle. You provide us the space.
Right.
Everybody wins. They can sell it as an amenity to their future renters or their current renters.
Right.
And, you know, we get access to more people who are likely to need and want our service.
And then they might put one or two cars there. Is that how it typically works?
Yep. We try to do two just to kind of give choice. So maybe one SUV and one sedan just to meet every possible use case.
So you asked him what's next. I have two what's next. So one is, Lee, my wife burnt my house down a few months ago.
Yes, you mentioned that. Mm.
So now I live down the street at 60 Perimeter Place. And I would love, well, how cool would it be if we had two or three Maven cars right there? Because we're really enjoying the whole walk around kind of thing. So that's one thing.
We're outside the perimeter. They're ITP.
Okay. All right.
Hey, we're working our way over.
It'll get there. We said what's next, not what's happening.
That's right.
What's next? So that's one. And then the other one is the Maven Business Radio X Tour. These things are wired. We can broadcast live from a Maven vehicle.
Let's do it.
And we could zip around town. We could pick up the guest, interview them, drop them off where they
with one
to
of your Uber or Lyft drivers with driving. Right. Safety's first.
Yeah. Right. So that we can do the interviewing. And just to clarify, my wife's burning down the house was not motivated by anything in particular. It was a complete accident.
Right, it wasn't his ex-wife.
No, she's still very much my wife, and nobody got hurt, and we're going to have an almost new house. But those are my two ideas. What do you think about that?
You know what? If we can make number two happen, I'll get the escalator for that. It's on me.
It sounds like fun. So where can our listeners go learn more about this? It's all about the app, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the app on the Google Play or App Store, search for Maven, or you can check us out at www.maven.com.
Well, keep up the good work, and I'm not giving up on this outside the perimeter thing either. I know you guys got to focus, you got to develop inside the perimeter, but I'm not giving up on that idea either. All right, hey, can you hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have speaker, author, consultant, got a new book coming out any day now, I think, called Co-Create. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. David Noor. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So, David, can you share a little bit about the Noor Group? How are you serving folks?
Oh, boy. This is year 15 of the business. I'm elated to work with really business leaders in driving their growth through their strategic relationships.
And how'd you get into this?
It was a pure accident. You guys may know locally Dan Brown, who at the time was a deputy CIO at SunTrust, and he invited me to come to a church and talk about networking of all things. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking 5-6 people at a church gathering. I show up and there's 250 people sitting in an auditorium. And I'm thinking, what am I going to tell these people that are going to laugh and walk out? And sure enough, I talked about these ideas of relationship currency and reputation capital and stayed for 90 minutes afterwards where people wanted to know more. And that was some 14, 15 years ago.
And that was, you wrote the book Relationship Economics?
That was my first one. Yeah, Co-Create is actually book number 10. We've had a lot of success.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of success with Relationship Economics, working on a third edition of that book. And it's actually the prequel in the Star Wars vernacular to Co-Create. So it builds on those ideas of strategic relationships.
Now, talking about relationships and specifically relationships in business, how... what are some rookie mistakes that the new business person makes when they're thinking about relationships?
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people confuse what I call vibration with forward motion. They get out and they want to meet a lot of people and they go to a lot of networking events or they connect with a lot of people online and they really don't have anything to show for it. So I advocate focus on fewer, but more meaningful, more real relationships that you can show a return on that investment of time, effort, and resources.
But when you say focus on fewer, there's that fear of missing out that,
sure.
You know, a lot of people, especially young people, have that kind of butterfly attention span where they're, you know, jumping from pollen to the next flower to the next flower. How do you help them choose the right ones or how can they choose the right relationship to invest in?
One of the most popular conversations I have with folks is the first chapter of the Relationship Economics book is focused on top 10 reasons why most networking doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the Reader's Digest version is there's no purpose, there's no goal, there's no plan.
Right.
So instead of jumping from transactionally one contact to another, and whether it's social, online, or offline, if you focus on fewer but more meaningful relationships that are relevant to you, it actually helps you get things done. But you have to have some sort of a purpose, some sort of a plan for why you're networking. Why are you trying to build that relationship for ideally some sort of outcome?
And that's because you, I mean, in order to do that, you have to kind of be self-aware to understand what you bring to the table.
Right? Very much so. Very much. And the key word you said is what I bring to the table. So unfortunately, a lot of people network and kind of thinking about themselves and thinking about what's in it for me versus if I start to invest, and Adam was talking about Maven, I'm thinking, how can I be an asset to Adam? How can I help him? So if you start by giving a hand, it's a lot easier to ask for something in return. But and I don't know about your bank account. Mine won't let me deposit $100 and get $1,000 in return. Yet how often people come to us, you know, asking for something where they really haven't earned the right to do so.
Mm-hmm. And then, so when you were writing the book, were you using all the relationships that you had? Like, how did you leverage those relationships to help you grow, you know, your practice and, you know, create this amazing content?
Sure. So I tell most of my male friends, writing a book is the closest thing we'll come to giving birth. Because it does take time and effort, and you have to breathe, and you want to tell everybody, get away from me, right? But I actually interviewed about 100 executives. I leveraged a lot of existing client examples and case studies. So in the book, I use a case study from KPMG. Another client is Hilton. Another client is ThyssenKrupp, which is one of the world's largest manufacturer of elevators and escalators. So I used a lot of those examples to really demonstrate and show kind of really the evolution of creating a very different future for yourself and your organization.
Now, a lot of people, there's a lot of things in marketing and in networking that can be measured. How do you choose what are the things that are worth measuring?
Sure. When it comes to relationships, you really need to think about the investments you're making, right? The time, effort, resources to get to know somebody. And over time, you know, how many visits did you take? And the things that you can really measure from relationships are ideas like time to market, ideas like time to traction, ideas like, again, I'm thinking of Adam's content and comments about Maven gaining traction. I would coach him on really think about what relationships do you have? Which ones can you go to? Who are those influencers and can really help accelerate your ability to get the word out and get your product or service into the market?
Now, but can you actually come up with an ROI on relationships?
We have. If you think of one example is time to market, right? So how long would it take you to take an idea to market? We've proven that the right relationships can accelerate that something like 40 to 60% mm-hmm. because you connected to the right people. Or cost of acquiring a customer. Think of the days of, I'm convinced, the days of cold calling are numbered. So for sales professionals, how do I leverage relationships to, again, open doors? And maybe I get in riding their coattail, but at some point I have to prove myself and my value. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it costs me a lot less to acquire that customer becomes invaluable. And you leverage relationships to help you get there.
Now, when you're kind of measuring the relationship, how much value is in that initial, like take today? I don't know. Did you know Adam before?
We didn't.
Okay. So you're complete strangers.
Sure.
Right? So now you kind of know him a little. Adam, would you take his call if he called you like in a week? I'm putting you on the spot.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to measure the value of this.
Yeah, and I talk about the relationships taking that some time to develop. Sure.
Right, so what happened in here obviously accelerated the relationship.
Sure.
And so how would you kind of quantitate that to show somebody the value of what happens in here, say?
Yeah, it's really important for your listeners to think about a spectrum, right? So Adam and I just met. This is a good spark, right?
Right.
But at some point, you have to fuel that, right?
Right.
So an ideal next step would be we exchange cards, mm-hmm. I follow up with them. Hey, why don't we connect for a cup of coffee? And let me better understand your business model. Let me better understand what
right.
you're trying to do. And through that investment, and I've always said, if you add value to that very next interaction, right? Hopefully the light bulb goes off. Adam says, hey, this guy is sharper than the average bear.
Right.
And at some point, not only says, thank you, but he says, what can I do to help you?
Right.
Right. And that's where the reciprocity starts to begin. And mm-hmm. if you start to add value to every interaction, then Adam actually looks forward to getting your calls and emails because he knows you're going to add value
right.
anytime you connect. I'm not spamming him. I'm not sending him useless information.
Right.
So that's how you start to nurture it. And at some point, it elevates above and beyond the noise. So Adam knows David more so or better so or thinks more highly of you than others and starts to prioritize in reinvesting back in the things you need, the things you ask for. that's where we see relationships elevate to a different level because now you're a priority.
And then you're outside the clutter now of the regular noise that he's getting. Right. And that's where, and maybe that's the double-edged sword of social media and all the different channels where there's a lot of noise and it's hard to kind of bubble up to get the attention.
That's exactly right. So social media, I'm actually convinced, contributes more to that noise and more to that busyness versus, as I said earlier, fewer, more real, more meaningful relationships when you perceive there's value in that exchange of time, effort, and ideas.
Right. And that's another case against kind of the, just because you can measure something doesn't mean it's worth measuring, right? Because you can have millions of followers, but if you're not having those meaningful conversations, that's meaningless.
That's exactly
isn't it?
Right. Similarly, a lot of online apps and a lot of online tools think eyeballs are valuable. Well, that's great. How many people clicked on it? How many people actually downloaded it? How many people not used it once, but came back subsequently to use it? More importantly, how many people shared their experience with others and really became advocates of your value, not just looked at it or clicked on it?
So do you spend a lot of time kind of getting people off the ledge regarding all the social media stuff? Because they probably are being, I mean, all their marketing people are saying, you got to be on Twitter. You got to be, you know, blogging, you got to be cranking out videos, you got to be creating all this social media content.
Yeah, no question. Social media has its value, which is to create awareness, right? You got to create awareness. And I have a mentor who says, if you don't toot your own horn, there's no music, right?
That's a
good
one.
So you do have to create your own, you got to create some awareness. But at the end of the day, what you, even online, what you're trying to do is build digital relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going to come from exchange of value. Those are going to come from subsequent interactions. So I actually use LinkedIn proactively. And what I found on LinkedIn is beyond your connections, if you start to post articles, if you start to add value to people's lives with content, with quality content, they'll engage, they'll comment, they'll forward it, they'll talk to others about it. And it's a great way to really create that awareness. And in Co-Create, I talk about creating market gravity or market pull.
Mm-hmm.
That's what social media can really help you do.
Now, what does that mean, market gravity?
Sure. So unfortunately, the analogy I like to use, I don't know if you or any of your audience have ever tried pushing a rope. It really doesn't work that well. Doesn't work very well. So we're just inundated with push marketing, push advertising, push management, push leadership. So much so that we've become desensitized to it. Conversely, look at what we're gravitated towards. Things that we find interesting, things that we find of value. So I coach a lot of people trying to really focus on how do I create gravity? How do I create pull by becoming an object of interest, by really adding value that makes people want to know more? That's a lot of a stronger strategy to, again, elevate yourself above the noise than all the ads, all the social media stuff that we do, all the things that people kind of disengage from.
But it sounds counterintuitive because we have marketing people in here all the time telling me how important it is to get content. Content is king, and sure. I got to keep throwing it out there.
Yeah, I'm going to actually add a little caveat to that. I believe context is king. So mm-hmm. So content focused on the right target audience for the right reasons, solving the right problems, that's what creates that gravity. That content is just adding to the noise. Right? Search any of your favorite topics. You'll get millions of returns, right? Search a very specific or a long tail, right? And you get very specifically kind of what you're looking for. That's context. That's what sets you apart.
Now, is it a challenge, though, when you're doing that and you're that kind of specific, that you're only kind of dealing with people who think exactly like you do, and that can be kind of a trap in this as well?
Again, I'm going to rephrase it. You're focusing on, and that's one of the challenges in the push economy.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to be everything to everybody.
Right.
Versus, what if you focused on fewer? And again, just referencing back to Adam, I'm not convinced everybody's a right customer for Maven. And he will tell you that's not the case.
Right.
So what if we focused on people that are having those kinds of issues? People that are having those challenges, and I don't believe everybody's damaged, they also see the upside opportunity, but let's focus. So in Co-Create, I call it the Jerry Maguire business model.
Okay.
What if we focused on fewer people, fewer relationships, but we created a deeper impact in their lives? That, I believe, would actually make all the marketing investments and expenses that much more valuable, that much more impactful.
But when you pick fewer and you decide to go deeper, then you're, by doing that, you're it almost forces you to improve the quality.
No right? question. And you become the go-to resource, go-to people for that specific need. Mm-hmm. So again, a lot of companies, small, medium, large, try to be everything to everybody. And I couldn't disagree with that strategy more because you can't. You can't serve a very broad audience, even with a proliferation of your products and services. Focus is the key as we move forward to the next evolution of competitive products and services and so on and so forth.
Now, in the evolution of kind of the workforce nowadays, is it changing as well? Whereas the people who used to work for these big mega companies like the GMs are now working for the smaller companies like the Mavens now, right? So question. Then they have to kind of brand themselves for their own personal brand a little differently than they may have had to do historically, right?
So I do a lot of board of director advisory work. And I took a board to the Consumer Electronics Show last year. And this 70-something-year-old gentleman who was kicking and screaming the entire time, like, we're not in consumer electronics. I don't know why we should go. Right. And I don't think we've been there 15 or 20 minutes. And he pulls me aside and says, I see now that every business currently is or soon will be under attack. Mm-hmm. So with that backdrop, absolutely right. So I believe business models are going to change. Look at GM and Maven. All right. Workforces are going to change. And again, in Co-Create, I talk about the Hollywood talent model. If you think about Hollywood, very few people work for the studio, right? They come up with a project and then they hire an executive producer and then they hire a director and then, you know, front of camera talent and behind the camera talent. And so they come together. It could be for a couple of years, but it's around a very specific project. And when that project is done, everybody kind of goes their own way.
Right.
They come back together again based on the repute. Based on their performance, based on their execution, based on the fact that they did a great job with the last movie, that they'll want you back as a cameraman or as audio.
They have their own little mafia that they all are buddies with. They know they can trust them, and they all kind of come along for the ride for the next adventure.
So imagine the same project kind of focus in our companies. Right. What if we brought the best of the best talent into an organization for a specific project, got it done, got out? Now you have less of the overhead. You have less of that fixed cost and fixed expense, but you still focus on getting things done.
But it requires the individual who is the talent, in this case, to have that kind of be less, I guess, security-minded and think that I'm going to be taken care of by this big company and these benefits that you think those days are over.
Yeah, the fundamental to the gig economy is I'm going to focus on what I do well. I'm going to be the best person for it. I'm going to paid well. I'm going to get paid well to do that project, that initiative. When it's done, I don't need the security of a paycheck every 2 weeks. I'm going to go find the next opportunity.
Right.
And because I've performed, because of my reputation, I'll find other, and I have other relationships in the market that'll pull me in for the next opportunity.
And then that's a good advice for a young person as well, in that, you know, your current boss, look at them as your client, right? Rather than...
No question. The days of, I think, our days or our parents' days of staying at a company for 20 years or 50 years and getting a pen or a watch are long gone. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, the continuing employability, right? What are you doing to increase your skills? What are you doing to build your relationships and really elevate the quality of the work that you do? That, again, you become in demand. Great people are always in demand. Competent, capable people, always in demand. And we're seeing more and more companies be open to, I'm going to bring a team in to do a very specific project. When they're done, they're gone. They're not necessarily the long-term employees.
I know, but that's not a negative.
Not at all.
No. That's a positive.
And again,
because I could be working with best in class constantly.
Absolutely. And it takes a visionary leader to say, you know what? Our only option, especially when recruiting is getting that much more challenging, our only option isn't to just bring in full-time employees. Let's get the job done with the best talent we can find.
Right. And then deploy them where we need them, when we need them.
Absolutely.
So now, what's next for you? You've been able to kind of create this relationship economics model and then build a whole business around it, right?
Yeah, I've been blessed. I spoke 62 times globally last year at company events and association events and academic forums. I consult on growth. I coach. And the notion is, how do we leverage strategic relationships to accelerate our ability to get things done?
Mm-hmm. And then, so what's the pain that company or prospect is having for them to say, you know what, we got to call Dave and his team?
Typically, either revenue is stagnant, there's margin pressure, they're not getting traction with a product or service that they're trying to take to market. I do a lot of international work. I was born abroad and worked abroad. And One of the biggest challenges companies make when they try to go abroad is they think they can parachute their way in. Mm-hmm. Rest of the world builds relationships first from which they do business. Unfortunately, as Americans, we're so focused on the business mm-hmm. part that only yeah. if the business works, we'll think about the relationship.
Right. I'd like to get you back another time to talk about how with all this marketing automation, how all these companies are relying on these SDRs sure. and just kind of doing that old school cold calling.
Sure.
Everybody's cold calling the same people with different products.
Not only that, the clients have become more sophisticated, right? Some right. of my clients, their assistants have assistants. And their whole job is to keep you out.
Right, right, exactly.
So I'm not convinced that, you know, the cold calling is nearly as effective as it could be or should be.
Right. So maybe that's for another time.
All right. So let's make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you, maybe have a conversation with you or someone on your team. Whatever's appropriate, LinkedIn, email,
sure.
phone, you know, whatever.
Right now, the best place they can go is cocreatebook.com. Again, it's cocreatebook.com.
All right. Hey, listen, can you stay with us? We got one more guest.
Happy to.
Fantastic. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am. Pressure's on.
He's been so patient, but he's been nodding his head. He's been taking notes. I think he might have rolled his eyes one time during the first segment. But other than that, I mean, he's been very tuned in. Okay, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming with Instacart, Mr. Nick Friedrich. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Instacart. What are you out there doing for folks?
Sure. So Instacart is an on-demand grocery delivery service. So what that means essentially is consumers can go online, shop from their favorite local retailers, grocery stores, and get what they want when they want it within 1 or 2 hours or less.
Now, I saw you first at Publix here in town. Do you have a partnership with them? Or
we do, right? Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they said, I believe what I read was that I can, within an hour or something, like correct. I can go online and pick the stuff out and then an hour it'll be delivered to me?
Yep. That's the magic of Instacart. I call it a magical wow. experience. So you go online, you can go to either Instacart.com or use our Instacart app. Depending on where you live, you'll have a variety of local retailers available to you. In the Atlanta area, it includes Whole Foods, Publix, Costco, Petco, and also Kroger. You would go online, you build your virtual cart. We have mm-hmm. all the items that are in the store online. So you build your cart, you pick a day and a time you want the delivery to be done. It could be within an hour or two. I think the fastest delivery we made was in 45 minutes or so. Adam was part of that experience. That was fun. And then so you can have them delivered within an hour or two, schedule for later in the day when you're home, or even later in the week if you want, if you're traveling. And then our shopper will then receive the order, shop for the items, and then make the delivery for you.
Now, do you find that people don't like to do grocery shopping? Because like I'm the weird one, but my wife and I, this is what we do on the weekend.
Yeah, no, it's a mix. You know, I think a lot of people do enjoy the experience, right? You go to the grocery store, you discover new products. If you're a cook, I love to cook, so I love to walk around the aisles and find new ingredients. But the reality is, I think there's a few things happening. One, everyone's getting busier and busier, right? Mm-hmm. Demands of life and work continue to increase. Combined with consumer behavior is changing as well, where people are getting more familiar and more used to buying online and getting items delivered to their door. So what we're trying to do is partner with retailers so that we can move them into the omni-channel environment and world where they can have the best of both worlds. If you want to go to the grocery store, great. Go to the grocery store, have that experience. But if you're busy and you want to save a couple hours in your weekend, reinvest that in your family or exercising or sleeping, you can do that as well.
So now the experience is I go, so say I like to shop at Publix or do I have to pick one place? Because like maybe my Instacart person is going to run to Whole Foods and Publix, or how does this work?
So I'll use myself as an example. My wife and I, we might buy some items from Whole Foods, some specialty right. items. We might buy bulk of our items from Publix, and then we might buy large quantity items. We have three kids, so large quantity items from Costco.
Right.
We'll build a list and we'll buy from all those places at once.
So it's really storage agnostic.
Correct. Yes. Right? Yeah. You can pick whichever store you want from and buy from multiple stores at a time.
And so I build the list and it could have several items from each of those three that you mentioned.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now, an Instacart person goes to each of those, or you have Instacart people at Publix, Instacart people at...
Yeah, at some stores we'll have actual shoppers based in the store.
Right, because I've seen them. They got their little little laptop thing. And
we have the app where they're usually nose down in the app, which is essentially a shopping list, a smart shopping list for them. We also have staging areas where you have coolers and fridges and dry racks. And then some stores we have shoppers who will just go in and shop and leave. So we have a mix of in-store shoppers who do the actual shopping. They're very fast and efficient. And then we also have drivers that will actually deliver the
goods. And then they just swing around to each of those three places, mm-hmm. and then they come to my house and drop it off.
Exactly. Yep.
Wow, what a great concept.
And the first delivery is free. I'm at Costco right now shopping. I'm already signed up. You just let me know what you want as soon as we get off the air. But and
that would have been good. We could have done it right at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, no kidding.
I should have done that. Yeah, first delivery is free. Thanks for calling that out. It's $5.99 for delivery. A lot of our members actually will sign up for Instacart Express, which is $149 a year annual subscription. Sometimes we actually have specials where it's less than that, where delivery is free. And given the rate at which people order groceries, it pays for itself.
So it's free, and I can order. Can I order one item, or is there a minimum?
Yeah, minimum $35.
So it's by dollar amount.
Correct. Yes. Yep.
And then you just come wherever I am. It doesn't have to be my house. Like, you can come to my work. You can come wherever.
Absolutely.
I am.
Yeah, so, we actually have a cohort of our customer base that is actually business clients. We're office managers. Even small restaurants will order through us to get items to deliver to their business.
And is it only groceries that you do?
Correct. Right now, we're focused on the grocery vertical. It's a very large space, and it's probably one of the more complicated ones to operate within. So we're focused exclusively on groceries.
How about some smoked salmon for lunch? I got it right here. I got the Norwegian traditional dill pepper smoked salmon slices.
Perfect. Yeah, throw in some bagels, some cream cheese. We'll be set.
Now, what about, this is one of my things that would make me hesitant to use this, is produce.
Yep.
Like, how do they, like, you know, everybody has different things. I like firm apples, or somebody likes softer apples. Like, how do you kind of deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a common concern, is the quality of the items you'll receive. So we actually, whenever we hire new shoppers, we go through extensive coaching and tips and training with them and how to pick the best produce. Because that's, you know, if you order with us once and you have a bad experience, you probably won't come back. And
right.
We want to mitigate that from happening. So we work through like lots of very common produce challenges. Like, how do you pick the best avocado? How do you look for the right bananas? So we train and we coach our shoppers to pick the best possible items. In addition, we also, customers, when you build your list, if you have a very specific, unique needs, like let's say you want to make guacamole tonight for dinner,
I need a ripe avocado.
Yeah.
Right. I need one ready to go today.
You can add that note in there. And a lot of times customers will do that. They'll write in there, I need a guacamole tonight, make sure they're really soft avocados. And the shopper will see that and they'll look for that as well. And if they happen to not find it, they'll be able to communicate with you through the app or call you and say, hey, is there out of avocados today? Can I find you something else?
So that's a human that's interacting with me. It's not like some automated bot.
Correct.
The avocado bot.
Yeah, it's a very personal service. And we're constantly trying to mix both the process and the people and the product to make it as seamless as possible.
So now you're here in Atlanta. Are you elsewhere?
Yeah, we're currently in about 40 markets. We're launching almost... you know, two or three markets, I think, every other week. We're growing pretty rapidly. This year is a major focus on growth and increasing our household coverage in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So we're currently in about 40 markets and certainly in the Atlanta area, obviously.
So now, how do you leverage Maven?
Personally, I've tried it. Adam alluded to this. A lot of the on-demand companies are starting to partner with, companies like Maven. Certainly something that I think we're going to continue to explore because, the gig economy is growing, the contractor workforce is becoming a more of a common entity. And the fact is, like, it's going to be a war for talent out there. So the more we can make the experience better for these contractors, shoppers, or drivers, the better. So, partnering with companies like Maven will be great, where we can make it easier for our shoppers to find a job, find a car, and then work for us.
And then how are you leveraging companies like the Knorr Group?
Yeah, I took down some notes. I might give you a call. I'll connect with you on LinkedIn.
I like it. I like it.
You know, he's all about value, so you get a book out of this for sure. So now, for Instacart, are you having the same challenges that Maven does? It's just kind of getting the word out and getting kind of that adoption from the millennial. Is that your target?
Yeah, our target, we've over the years, we've learned there's a few different cohorts of customers we have. The biggest one I would say is, busy working parents.
Your first target?
Most of our growth has come through word of mouth. We haven't actually spent a lot of time marketing yet. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But where we're seeing most of the growth is busy working parents. People just want an extra hour a week. Like that.
Right.
To me, that matters a lot. We also have young millennials who just want to use any new technology.
And they love things being delivered.
Yes.
It's like getting presents.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. And they've grown up in an environment, where that they've been conditioned to operating and buying that way. We also have a community where either people have disabilities or elder community. We're actually going to the stores is hard. And we are very...
Do you partner with senior centers and things like that?
We haven't yet. But I think that's, again, things we want to do more of this year where we haven't done a ton of marketing. We haven't done a lot of brand awareness yet. And I think we're going to be a little bit more deliberate about that this year.
Yeah, that's... because I have senior parents, and my wife does as well, and that's an issue. You know, you're at an age where you have to give out the car, and now you still can go to Publix and get everything you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we see a lot of people do is actually, let's say you live in Atlanta, but you have parents that live in Florida, they'll order for their parents and get it delivered to their parents, and the parents don't even have to use the technology, which is really
great. That is one of the challenges. Now, you mentioned the marketing. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Sure, yeah. And, to date, I would say the company's been privileged to grow organically just through word-of-mouth marketing. We've launched multiple markets. People hear about us and they tell their friends, and we've grown very rapidly through that. But I think as this year, one of the big goals we have is to expand our household coverage. And that's certainly one way to grow, but we also want to build awareness. So we're going to be partnering more with our retailers to make their consumers more aware of the delivery service they offer. But we'll also make more efforts around marketing just to build brand awareness nationally.
And then, because I saw your signage in the store, so that's probably a way that you... Because you know that they like to shop there.
Yeah, our consumers are going to the stores anyway. So I think the more we can build in-store brand awareness is one step. And a lot of our retailers are... we call white labeling, where they're building the delivery service on top of their brand, and we're sort of the engine that powers it on behind.
And you're
the scenes.
Okay with that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, we want to help extend the reach and the service of our local retailers, and I think if we do that well, we'll win and they'll win.
Are you seeing adoption? Are people opting for this? Like once they see your signage, are they kind of calling you?
No, absolutely. And we're doing lots of different testing with retailers where we put signage up in some places, or A/B testing essentially. Right. And yeah, absolutely. We're seeing growth. We're seeing a lot of demand. We're seeing high reorder rates as well. Mm-hmm. And it's all an indicator that we're delivering value, which is what we want to do. And people keep coming back.
Yeah. Were you just making conversation, or do you really want avocado?
I had
avocado. I know y'all are doing a radio show, but I'm over here getting groceries.
You're making guacamole for lunch.
Big fan of avocado. Good fats, right? Good fats.
So now... So you're getting the word out. Are you in town like Maven, or you're all over the metro area?
Yeah, we're fairly large outside of the Atlanta area. So we go as far north as Canton, Milton, Cumming, as far west as Kennesaw, Marietta, as far east as Buford, Lawrenceville, and as far south as College Park, Union City. And we continue to obviously want to continue expanding that. We're across about 1 million households in Atlanta.
Now, are you looking right now do you need drivers? You need the shoppers? You need the customers? You need all of the above?
All of the above is great. Certainly customers. We have a really large, strong shopper workforce. We're actually constantly hiring and building out our shopper workforce because of the demand. So every week, my team is constantly hiring up anywhere from 20 to 50 to 70.
Really?
Yeah. It's a constant routine. And that's just in one market. We're hiring hundreds across many markets every week. And that's just a result of the demand, which is great. And we're really excited about that.
And then is it for the driver? Is this something like this? David mentioned earlier, the gig economy. This is one of the things they do?
Yeah. Usually it's a secondary job for most people. Mm-hmm. One of the priorities we also have this year is we're really trying to double down and invest in our shopper community, our contractor community. We want this to be a role that's highly flexible, which people like because they tend to have another job, a role that pays competitively, a role that's fun and engaging. And that's the really tricky part for a lot of these gig economy companies. Like, how do you invest in this workforce that sort of comes and goes? Investing in all those things and doing all those things simultaneously really well is going to be the challenge.
And so how'd you get into it?
I was a customer before I started working for them. So when I lived in Austin, we started using the service. We had our first child. We were pulling our hair out because we had no time to do anything, trying to adjust to life with a kid. So we started using the service. We loved it, saved us a ton of time. We moved to Atlanta. And again, we continued to be customers. And then they were hiring in the area. So applied and went through the process.
So were you working at a startup here in Atlanta?
Here in Atlanta, I was working for AT&T. And prior to being in Atlanta, I worked for Facebook.
So you've kind of run the gamut.
Yeah, I've worked for large companies for a while in technology side. Worked at Facebook for a while, doing a very high growth tech space, which was a lot of fun. And then when I came to Atlanta, I really wanted to get back into that. So being able to join Instacart was just a really lucky opportunity.
What's the part you like the most of being in this kind of high growth?
I think there's a few things. I think first and foremost, it's the people. Working with really smart people who are very driven, who just are all excited about building something is one piece. I think the second piece is just being part of shifting how consumers shop for groceries. It might sound like a simple thing, but I think, you know, it's a $600-700 billion space and no one's done it really well for a long time. So how do we help define and redefine how consumers interact with retail, specifically groceries, and make this a wonderful, delightful experience? I think it's a really hard problem, and it's something that I'm excited about being a part of. And then thirdly, just, you know, again, getting back to the building aspect, it's just really fun building this company and working with a small group of people to get there.
Now, do you cover just Atlanta or you work the region?
Where
are
you? Sure. Yeah. So I'm responsible for the Southeast, which includes Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, and we're launching about a dozen more markets in the near future. And then also New York.
Oh, that's a logical throw them in there. Right?
Yeah.
New York's just like Atlanta.
it's a unique but fun challenge. New York is a competitive market. It's fun, and I, you know, pop up there regularly as well.
So now, do you find that the markets treat this the same? Like, do people behave the same way in these different markets?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think the adoption rate is different by market. So South Florida, for example, has been growing phenomenally fast. Exponential rates, and it's just interesting how different markets do take this, does inherit the product faster.
What about
others,
like the Palm Beaches, where that's older than South Florida?
I think what we'll see, it's fairly new. We're only about 4 or 5 months into that particular area. I think we'll find probably there's some more seasonality there. Mm-hmm. While in South Florida, it's constantly growing week over week for over a year. So I think as we enter new markets, we're going to learn quite a bit because we're going to start entering less dense markets over the near future.
Right.
And we're going to have to think about how we operate efficiently and productively and the high level of productivity in those markets. So I think we have a lot to learn there.
Good stuff. So if somebody wants to learn more, is this an app-driven thing too?
It is. It's definitely a mobile-first product, but we also have a website. So you can go to instacart.com or look for the app on either Android or Apple. And download the app, and then you enter in some information, your zip code, and off you go.
Good to go.
Build your cart.
And then so you do everything there in the Instacart app, mm-hmm. including purchasing the groceries and
absolutely.
The whole thing.
Yep.
And then
you build your cart, you pay for the items, and you set your day and time, you pay for the items, and you're done.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Absolutely. It's been a privilege.
All right. And thanks to all the guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.